I'm Zach Kutka with Hutka Farms in Westphalia, Texas. You're listening to the latest news in Texas agriculture on Texas Ag Today.
This is Texas Ag Today, the number one source for the latest news in Texas agriculture. The largest and most experienced farm news team in the Lone Star State covers it all. From the piney woods of East Texas to the rocky ranges of the Trans-Pecos, and from the Panhandle down to the Rio Grande Valley. Here's today's top stories.
With the winter wheat season drawing to a close in the Texas Panhandle, selling wheat as hay might be the most profitable option. I'm James Hunt, and we'll talk about that on Texas Ag Today.
An agricultural group is asking USDA not to cancel the July cattle report. I'm Jessica Domel, and I'll have more coming up on Texas Ag Today.
Cotton farmers on the South and High Plains of Texas have their priorities in the farm bill and also with dealing with the loss of dicamba for their crops. I'm Tom Nicoletti, and I'll have more on Texas Ag Today.
Now, here's the host of Texas Ag Today, Carrie Martin.
Hello, Texas. Why don't you jump on in with me and buckle up? We're going to take a ride around the Lone Star State as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the nation, Texas agriculture. Be sure to hold on tight because it all starts right now. Corn is up and growing strong in much of Texas, but in the Panhandle and Southern Plains, corn planting is just getting started. Adam Hickson is an agronomist with BASF in Lubbock.
I have seen maybe one or two planters going and seen a couple of pictures of corn just poking up or at the spike stage. So I really think after this rain event that we had recently, got anywhere from half an inch to 3 inches up in the Amarillo area, I'm hearing. I really think next week we're really going to be going hot and heavy with corn planting.
But it's still a bit early to plant cotton.
Nobody started yet. Mid-April time frame, I'd say soil conditions are still a little bit too cool. Maybe a couple more weeks. Typically, up north, they start planting north of Amarillo. They start planting cotton around early May, and then it starts to progress south. Kind of interesting because you would think, North Amarillo is going to be cooler conditions, but they have a shorter growing season. So they got to kind of roll the dice and get in there early with their planting. But we haven't quite started yet. Soil moisture is actually looking pretty good, though. So I'm assuming we're off to a pretty good start as far as that goes.
Statewide, 59% of the corn crop is planted. Only 8% of the cotton is in the ground. Early bird registration is now underway for Texas A&M AgriLife's annual Livestock Guardian Dog Field Day.
The event will be held from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. April 26th at the AgriLife Center in San Angelo. This year's event will include workshops, a tour, producer panel, dog breeders, and vendors. Cost is $25 for a single person and $40 for a couple before April 19th. Cost is $30 for a single person and $50 for a couple after that date. A link to RSVP to the Livestock Guardian Dog Field Day is available on sanangelo.tamu.edu. That's sanangelo.tamu.edu. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Texas strawberry growers have enjoyed an early start to their season this year, and the crop looks excellent. The season started earlier than it has in the past few years by as much as 3 weeks. Part of this season's strong crop is due to a milder-than-usual winter for many strawberry growers. Selling wheat as hay may be the most profitable option for wheat growers in the Texas Panhandle. James Hunt has the story from Amarillo.
With a few weeks left to go in the season, Texas Panhandle farmers do have options for their winter wheat. Harvesting it for grain is a traditional choice, but Texas A&M AgriLife risk management specialist D.D. Jones says AgriLife analysis suggests that doesn't look good this year.
The grain and every scenario that we ran pretty well lost. If you're going to graze it, It's probably going to make you more money than cutting it for grain, but not as much as hay. And that's something a lot of people don't think about, but hay is worth a lot of money right now. You're probably talking for wheat hay, $125 to $150 a bale, which is around $270 a ton. And so when we factor in $270 a ton wheat hay and subject it to the same cost that we had for our wheat grain, then suddenly you're making $100 to $200 an acre versus barely breaking even in the other alternatives. So don't forget that hay might be an option. Obviously, when I say the cost are the same, you may have to rent a baler or you may have to have it custom baled. So keep in mind, harvest costs will probably be different. But in terms of the input costs, they're going to be very similar between the different options.
Want to do your own analysis? D.D. Jones says there's an online decision aid that allows for side-by-side comparisons.
It's just two tables, grain versus grazing, grain versus haying. And you can see which one looks the most profitable. And there is even a break-even graph that shows at what point of yield or price does one option begin to look better than the other.
That decision aid, the 2024 Wheat Harvest Analyzer, is on the homepage of AgriLife's Amarillo website at amarillo.tamu.edu. I'm James Hunt on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
USDA is canceling the July cattle inventory report, but Jessica Domel says some groups are asking them to reconsider that decision.
The National Cattlemen's Beef Association is asking the U.S. Department of Agriculture to reconsider its decision to discontinue several of its reports and surveys. USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service recently announced it is canceling the July cattle report and discontinuing the Cotton Objective Yield Survey and all county estimates for crops and livestock beginning with the 2024 production year. NASS said the decision to discontinue the reports was not made lightly, but was necessary given appropriated budget levels. NCBA said the reports provide critical data, and the decision to end them is completely misguided. Tanner Beimer, Senior Director of Government Affairs for NCBA, joins us with more.
Well, according to the press release they put out, they are trying to comply with budget cuts and try and stretch that dollar out a little bit. And it is true that the National Agricultural Statistics Service specifically took about an 11% haircut during the last appropriations bills that passed through Congress here a couple weeks ago. But in actuality, the amount of savings that they are going to realize through canceling these reports and discontinuing others and making some other revisions are not going to be the types of savings that are going to justify the immense cost to industry by not having access to this information.
Beimer said the decision to quit the July cattle report couldn't come at a worse time for the cattle industry.
If you want to just look at that July cattle inventory report, that is an incredibly important set of data that a lot of market analysts, livestock producers, and other participants in the marketplace rely upon to give us a sense of what's going on with supply and demand dynamics. And that's especially critical during the phase of the cattle cycle that we're currently in, which is herd contraction. This has been very similar to the 2014 run in a lot of ways, but in several other ways, it's been very different. And we won't be able to compare and contrast the two and get an accurate picture of where we are at as an industry without that information that comes out in that July report.
NCBA says the July cattle inventory report is one of only two per year the marketplace gets from NASS, so it will have a big impact on the cattle industry.
We get inventory reports twice a year, one in January and one in July. And that January inventory report is also important, but it is insufficient to kind of give us that sense of where we're at mid-year, right? That July report is looking at a very different seasonal time and a very different set of data. And again, the more information that you can pump into a marketplace, the better your price discovery is going to be, the better informed you're able to make decisions, and just the more robust a marketplace is.
NCBA is calling on USDA to reverse its decision and continue delivering the reports. USDA NASS says it has and will continue to review its estimating programs using criteria focused on the needs of its mission and customers to prioritize budget decisions. For the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network, I'm Jessica Domel.
Plains cotton growers are working on some priority issues. Tom Nicoletti reports from Lubbock.
My guest today is the new president of Plains Cotton Growers, Travis Myers, and he is a cotton farmer in O'Donnell in Dawson County. And Travis, Plains Cotton Growers covers a 42-county region in the South Plains and up into the High Plains of Texas. And talk about a couple of the goals for 2024 that you have. Of course, Farm Bill is high on people's list.
Right. I believe the Farm Bill is probably our number one priority this year. We've just got to have some security and future for our operations. You know, and I think the reference prices is one of the key elements that we need to have raised to help cover these rising costs of production.
Of course, crop insurance and a strong safety net for cotton farmers is, of course, extremely important.
Yes, it's vital to this area with the weather that we experience most years. We cannot survive without crop insurance. So it's vitally important to this industry to keep those levels up and the funding that is provided by Congress.
Another goal of Plains Cotton Growers, as I understand, is to focus on the loss of dicamba for your crops.
Oh, that's a huge deal for us. Without dicamba, it's just very hard for us to control the weeds, and that was a huge blow for this industry to have lost that label this year.
Explain what the organization is referring to in regards to a harvest incentive.
Well, we're working on a pilot program right now that will possibly pay a producer with a marginal crop to go ahead and harvest that crop, and so that that crop goes ahead and goes through the whole system, you know, and supports the gins and the oil mills and the trucking industry and the warehouse industry and keeps those people in business.
That is Travis Myers. He is president of Plains Cotton Growers. I'm Tom Nicoletti with the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
April is a gardening month for Texans. It's really good time of the year for us to be gardening. Please join me, John Begner, as we talk about things we need to be looking at.
And there are two different areas of the equine stomach. Veterinarian Dr. Bob Judd has more on that coming up.
These stories plus a look at the markets are straight ahead on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include but are not limited to livestock, feed, buildings, fences, and equipment. Additional expenses such as temporary pastures will also be considered. Completed applications must be submitted by May 31st to your local county Farm Bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Now back to more Texas Ag Today.
April is a good gardening month in Texas. Horticulturalist John Begnaud has more from San Angelo.
April is an action month in Texas as far as gardening goes. A lot of things we can be and should be doing, but one of the things we fail at sometimes is patience, because we're ready to fertilize, we're ready to do all kinds of things, but the plants might not be ready. Plants will be telling you when they're ready for some things. A good example is when they begin to grow and put out new leaves and new shoots, they tell you that all functions are go. The roots are able to absorb water and nutrients, and whether they're using stored food from last year or just beginning again, pushing out shoots, pushing out leaves, it's very rapid, especially if conditions are very good. And that means temperatures, humidity, maybe not so much wind, soil moisture, which is very critical. You have to have adequate moisture for roots to expand and absorb those nutrients and begin that growth period. So don't be in a quick hurry to, let's say, cut off the tops of old bushes or trees you think that have been damaged by the freeze or the drought. Until you see plants begin that growth and show you where the growth stops and maybe the deadwood begins, that doesn't mean you can't prune in the middle of spring or summer, but give it time to adjust to all that. That new growth will tell you that it's time to fertilize. When you see leaves on grass begin to grow and you've mowed it a couple of times, that's an indication, again, all systems are go. Great time to fertilize. If you fertilize too early, you run the risk of nitrogen, which is the most volatile and leachable nutrient and the thing that grass needs the most of, gone by the time the grass is actually ready for it. And look out for other critters. At this time of the year, not only plants like spring, but bugs like spring. Aphids are a good example, and they love new growth on the tips of crepe myrtles, on the tips of all kinds of plants. These aphids will suck the juices and distort the shape of the leaf for the rest of its life. So do a little examining. Walk through those plants and see if that new growth is succumbing to the presence of insects and take action accordingly. And the way you do it is if you can do wash them off, that's fine. If you need spray, take an insecticide that is safe for the environment and probably will remove those insects rapidly. So just do a little integrated pest management to control those.
This is John Bagno reporting for Texas Ag Today from San Angelo.
There are two different areas of the equine stomach. Dr. Bob Judd says management of ulcers in these two areas is different.
The equine stomach is divided into the squamous and glandular portions, and the cause of gastric ulceration in these areas is different. Squamous ulceration is usually due to stomach acid splashing up on the area as horses exercise, as there is no protection from stomach acid in this area. The glandular area of the stomach is the topic of today's program, and although acid exposure can play a role, Dr. Heidi Bansay from Louisiana State University indicates this is unlikely the primary cause. Many believe that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or NSAIDs like butazolidone or banamine can contribute to glandular gastric ulcers by decreasing prostaglandin levels. And although high doses of these drugs have led to ulcers, the prostaglandin levels were not decreased, but treating with prostaglandins helped to prevent ulcers, so the cause is unknown. Decreased blood supply to the stomach can lead to glandular ulcers, and exercise could play a role as it decreases blood flow in the area of the stomach. Another potential cause is stress, as horses with ulcers had higher cortisol levels. Although Helicobacter is found to play a role in development of peptic ulcers in humans, there is no evidence to associate this bacteria with ulcers in horses. Decreasing the number of days per week the horses exercise may decrease ulceration, as warm bloods that were exercised 5 to 7 days per week had more ulcers than those with less exercise. The disease can be prevented using omeprazole once daily prior to the first hay meal and before exercise. Sucralfate can be used to bind to ulcerated mucosa to provide a physical barrier from the gastric acid. Overall, glandular ulcers are difficult to treat and monitor.
I'm Dr. Bob Judd on the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.
We'll check the markets coming up next on Texas Ag Today.
If you're a Texas farmer or rancher with an unreimbursed loss from the recent wildfires, you can apply for assistance from the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. Unreimbursed losses include, but are not limited to, livestock, feed, buildings, fences, and equipment. Unreimbursed additional expenses, such as temporary pastures, will also be considered. Completed application for assistance must be submitted by May 31st to a local county farm bureau office or directly to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. For more details, go to texasfarmbureau.org.
Here's the latest market information on Texas Ag Today.
Let's take a look back at how the markets wrapped up on Monday. We kicked off the trading Monday with a higher cattle futures market. In fact, we closed it out sharply higher, with April live cattle up $1.40, 180.30, June up 235, 173.82, with August live cattle up 237, 171.12. Nice gains on the feeder cattle market. April up $1.95, 239.55. May feeders up 380, 238 even, with August up 427, closing at 249.77. Cash-fed cattle sales wrapping up last week at 182 here in the Southern Plains. That's 2 bucks lower than the previous week. Looking up north, live sales were mostly 184, dressed sales mostly 293. Those prices $2 to $4 lower compared to the previous week. Boxed beef prices higher, choice up 54 cents, 301.11. Select up 25 at 295.79. Now let's check the auction barns. We're walking the pens with Larry Marble.
Jody Fry is my guest. Jody heads up the cattle sale at Producers in Cargill every Thursday. Jody, how did it go?
I believe 685 was the total. Better quality steers, 400 to 600 pounds, from 240 up to a high of near 325, mostly 260 to $3. 600 to 800 pound steers from $2 to a high of near 270, mostly 225 to 255. Heifer calves, 400 to 600 pounds, from 220 to a high of $3, mostly 240 to 280. Slaughter cows, average to high yielding, 95 to 118. Still some of those highest yielding slaughter cows, several of those from 120 to a high of 142. Very very thin or very low yielding, including a few longhorn cows from 70 to 90. Slaughter bulls average to high yielding 115 to 140. A few of those highest yielding slaughter bulls 142 to a high of 162. Bred cows average to better quality, medium to heavy bred, singles with a few small groups that we sold today 1250 to a high of 2000. Cow calf pairs average to better quality pairs from 1600 to 2400. Had some groups of those second and third calf cows with calves at side trade from 2500 to 2950.
Right quick, what do you know for next week?
Well, we missed the rain, calling for warmer temperatures in the 90s, I think, for two or three. Country's kind of changing complexion. I think there's going to be some sheep and goats that are going to need to be moved. Not this wheat's kind of playing out. I look for at least 6,000 to 7,000. We may jump up there and have more one of these weeks. Cattle numbers, have a calf sale next Thursday in conjunction with the regular Thursday sale. So I'd say somewhere in this neighborhood of 700 to 850 head.
Jody, tell everybody how to contact you.
Office numbers 325-653-3371. Mobile phones 234-7895.
Neighbor, that's it for Walking the Pens. I'm Larry Marble. Thanks for listening. Good day.
Back over to the futures market now. Where lean hogs finished higher. May hogs up 45 cents, 94.32. The June up 37 at 102.45. Class 3 milk put in a higher close with April milk up 4 cents, 15.45 a hundredweight. May milk up 48, 16.87 a hundred. The cotton market closed with slight gains, but speculator and farmer selling kept a lid on those gains. May cotton up 31 points, 82.93. July up 56 at 85.15, while new crop December was up 46 at 80.57 cents. Corn closed lower as we continue to trade in a sideways pattern. Traders waiting to learn more about Brazil's safrinha crop. It looks like Brazil and Argentina are getting a couple of days of heavy rains. However, the forecast does look drier as we get past this week. May corn down 4 cents, 431 and a half. September corn down 3 at 453 and 3 quarters. Both hard and soft wheat close lower. May Kansas City wheat down 5 and 3 quarters, 584 a bushel. New crop July wheat down 6 and a quarter at 580 and 3 quarters. July Chicago wheat down 3 and a quarter, 567 and a half. In the energy markets, May natural gas was down 7 cents, $1.69. May West Texas crude down 10, $85.56 a barrel. The financial markets lower, with the Dow down 262 points, 37,721. The NASDAQ down 287, 15,890. The S&P down 62 points at 5,060. That wraps up our look at the markets, and that wraps up this episode of Texas Ag Today. I'm Kerry Martin. Hope to see you back here next time as we cover the most important industry in this greatest state in the U.S. of A, Texas agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for Texas Ag Today. Be sure to follow the Texas Ag Today podcast, found wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Texas farm and ranch news, check out our website at texasfarmbureau.org or tfbradio.com. Texas Ag Today is a production of the Texas Farm Bureau Radio Network.